With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. You're with Steve Malzberg on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome aboard, everybody. Steve Malzberg here, 10.04 p.m. on Friday on the East Coast of the United States. And you know what day and time it is wherever you are listening to the Steve Malzberg Show on TNT Radio. This week, I think I said it last week too, just has gone, it has flown by. It's going to be April. I mean, it's April for some of you now. It's going to be April. I mean, that's insane. It was just December. I just had COVID. You blink and you know, a quarter of the year is gone. All right. So let's get to a few things here. While we all focus, and we will focus tonight for the most part on the Trump situation and what lies ahead next week for the world, for the country, for Donald Trump, and for the city of New York as well. Something interesting has happened, of course, because of the wall-to-wall coverage of the Trump indictment. You have a fading away of the school shooting in Nashville. Now, that was bound to happen, I thought, once it was revealed that the shooter was a trans and apparently targeted Christians, because that neither one of those fits the media narrative, of course. So I just figured, just like the, or similar to the Wisconsin Christmas Day parade in a couple of Novembers ago, when someone with a minivan or whatever, a SUV, whatever it was, ran down about 60, 70 people in that parade, killing six, including a couple of youngsters and some seniors, you know. A little similar in nature to what happened here as far as the deaths, many, many, many more injuries. Well, once they found out that that was a black man driving that driving that vehicle, and that he had some BLM and different kinds of, black, what would you call it, superior, black national type stuff, if you will, on his postings and his social media, that story literally disappeared. Some media outlets picked it up after the trial and when he was sentenced. The trial, the conviction, they picked it up with the sentencing and gave it like 15 seconds. Remember back in blah, 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 blah. Well, he's been, that was it. It went away. It went away. You didn't learn all about the little boy who was killed, the 8-year-old boy. You didn't learn about the senior citizen woman who was dancing still at her age, a member of a dance group, a senior dance group, and the other four people who were killed and the dozens who were wounded. No interest. Didn't fit the narrative. Literally, the story just disappeared. And I thought that this one would too, even before Trump. I thought it would. But no, the media, I guess, made a conscious decision, maybe en masse, maybe at the urging of, who knows, government agencies, the White House, who knows in this day and age? How could you rule anything out until the indictment? They kept wall to wall, the liberal network certainly did, on the shooting. But a funny thing started happening. All of a sudden, it went from a trans shooter to no mention of a trans shooter. No mention of a trans shooter. It was just all totally about the gun. Only about the gun. As is usually the case, of course, unless it's a white male shooter, which it usually is, and then you look into the background, see if you could nab him for being a Trump supporter, a MAGA supporter, and what who the victims were, and if they were black, then the guy was a racist, and you know the deal. But this just turned in. This was just the gun, And now comes a story, and this is from the New York Post. They wrote this story. Top executives at CBS News, get this now. If you're standing up, you might want to sit down. If you're sitting down, you might want to lie down. Top executives at CBS News have banned staffers from using the word transgender when reporting on the Nashville shooter, despite the fact that police have said Audrey Hale was transgender and that she left a transgender type or influenced manifesto. Remember the manifesto? I guess they're still looking it over. They can't figure it out. This woman was such a genius. I guess she wrote in transgender code. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. So get this. So this was a memo obtained by the New York Post where the network executives alleged, quote, the shooter's gender identity has not been confirmed by CBS News. As such, we would avoid any mention of it as it has no known relevance to the crime. Should that change, we can and will revisit. Oh, that's wonderful. You can revisit. Wow, really? This is as sick and twisted and dishonest as it gets. Are you kidding me? The CBS News directive, according to the New York Post, was delivered on a Tuesday morning editorial call by Ingrid Cyprian Matthews, the executive vice president of news gathering, and Claudia Milne, the senior vice president of standards and practices. Gee, I wonder if either one of them are trans or LGBTQ plus whatever. This according to sources close to the Tiffany Network, of course, CBS. Right now, we advise saying police identified the suspect as a 28-year-old Audrey Hale, who they shot and killed at the scene, the memo said, and move on to focus on other important points of the investigation, community, and solutions. So this is, I mean, the chief of the Nashville police said Hale was a transgender, and CBS News can't confirm it? Well, if you look up in the sky, we cannot confirm it is blue. It may be green. We're not sure. So please refrain from ever referring to a blue sky, given that we cannot confirm it as such. So this is, look, this is a memo, allegedly, according to the New York Post, that they got a hold of. How many other memos, how many other directives have gone unreported on, have not been obtained, have not leaked from other news organizations? I mean, this is sick, sick, sick. Really sick stuff. The police chief said they had a transgender inspired manifesto, said that the person was a transgender. Nobody disputed that. The parents didn't dispute it. No friends didn't dispute it. Nobody came out and disputed it. But CBS News can't confirm it. Well, then CBS News sucks. But they rather have people laugh at them and say that. Of course, that wasn't for publication, the memo, you know, that went out. But it has been. So they'd rather be laughed at than dare to cross the trans, I won't say community, I'll say activists. And that's where this country is. You get a trans person who, we're told, leaves a manifesto, targets a Christian school, one that she used to attend, had another target in mind. It might have been the church, they speculated, which was right next door, but it might have been harder to get into, had better security. So she goes into this Christian school and kills Christians, and we're not supposed to say it was a trans shooter? And wait till later on, you're going to hear even better from the White House. Basically, you know what Karine Jean-Pierre was bitching and moaning about? Poor trans people, the poor trans community. Yep, yep. After one of their own targeted and slaughtered Christians. Folks, it's like bizarro world from Seinfeld. Google it, okay? Google it if you don't know what that is. But it's not really bizarro world, because bizarro world in Seinfeld is make believe. This is real. This is real. The threat of this and from this is real. And I don't know what the answer is. Again, what I'd like to have is every single Republican elected official, you know, they shouldn't have gone home for the weekend. They should have been in Washington. They should have stayed. They should have held press conferences, a rally, or urged every Republican to show up at the peaceful rally and say, hey, we're in a mess here. And then start reading off a litany of items like I do here every night. No. People have to go home. And the media continues their phony, fake, dangerous narrative of unarmed black men being hunted down by police, of trans people. They're under attack by these laws that are being passed. And the laws are being passed because the radical left and the trans and the LGBT community, all in conjunction, have pushed the envelope way too far when it comes to schools. All right, we'll get back to that a little bit later in the hour. So I want to take you to the Trump situation. As you heard at the top of the hour, if you were listening, Trump is going to or is scheduled to turn himself in New York, Manhattan, in the court at the courthouse on Tuesday at about 2:15 p.m. Eastern time. Reportedly, he will not be handcuffed. Reportedly, they'll drive him in through a side entrance. Not going to walk in, probably. He will be fingerprinted, have his mugshot taken. He'll be walked over to the courtroom itself, where he will probably plead not guilty. And then I don't know. But there's even a report out tonight, how true it is, you know, what the media says. Can you believe any of it? That the justice, some in the Justice Department were a little ticked off and disappointed that Alvin Bragg went ahead with this and had Trump indicted, while the other investigations in Georgia and the special counsel is looking into January 6th and the documents. They didn't want it. Okay. Now, here is Trump's attorney, Joe Tacopina, on Good Morning America. And he is, this is via Real Clear Politics. And, you know, they're talking about was he surprised by all this? And here's cut 375.
It was shocked because this actually is coming to fruition. I was always hoping that rule of law would have prevailed, George. But in my opinion, and I don't say this with pride or pleasure, in my 32 years as a lawyer, both as a prosecutor and defense attorney, I feel like the rule of law died yesterday in this country. And it's not something that I'm happy about.
Well, you're saying that, but you haven't seen the charges yet. There have been reports that there are at least 24, maybe up to 36 possible charges. Does that surprise you? Does it suggest there may be more here than you're expecting?
Not at all. It's still, I believe, all focused around this Stormy Daniels confidentiality settlement agreement, completely legal settlement agreement that was made years and years ago. I think what they've done was take each check or payment and extrapolated account out of that. But I don't think it's going to be more than what we expected as far as the factual patterns are concerned.
Yep, there you go. That's probably, I mean, what, all of a sudden, I mean, we know who the witnesses are, supposedly. What, all of a sudden they came up with some whole new thing to charge him with? These payments were allegedly made, as you heard him say, by several different checks at several different times. So probably each one is going to be a separate charge or whatever. So what could we expect next week? Here's cut 376.
I don't know what to expect other than an arraignment. You know,
and what will that look like?
Through that normal process. Your guess is as good as mine. I understand they're going to be closing off blocks around the courthouse, shutting down the courthouse. You know, we'll go in there and we'll proceed to see a judge at some point, plead not guilty, start talking about filing motions, which we will do immediately and very aggressively regarding the legal viability of this case.
Mugshot, handcuffs, perp walk.
Look, I'm sure they'll try and get every ounce of publicity they can from this thing. The president will not be put in handcuffs. As far as the mugshot's concerned, perp walk, I mean, you know, I'm sure they'll try to make sure they get some, you know, joy out of this by parading him. But, you know, I think this is a different situation. You have Secret Service involved here, George. You have the New York State Court Officers Union with Dennis Quirk and his team, the police department. So it's a lot of groups involved here. And I don't think they're going to allow this to become a circus as much as humanly possible.
Now, one final question here from George Stephanopoulos on Good Morning America to Trump's attorney, Joe Tacopina. And here is cut 377.
You say the rule of law is dying, but we do have a precedent here for this kind of case. Former Senator, presidential candidate John Edwards was indicted. Now, he did. He was not convicted. That is true. But this is not an unprecedented case.
It is, George. He was not only not convicted, that was a federal prosecution because these are federal campaign election laws. And that was a federal prosecution by the U.S. Attorney's Office who ultimately dismissed the case. And the key distinction there, George, was that John Edwards case, the payments were made by a donor. So that means campaign finance laws are invoked. Despite that, they still found that the payments were not made exclusively for the purpose of the campaign, and therefore the Justice Department dismissed that case. Look, the FEC, the Federal Election Committee here, did not proceed in this case. They found there was no violation. I've spoken to former Chairman Bradley Smith of the FEC, and he said there was no violation of campaign finance laws. The Justice Department here did not proceed in this case against the president. So there is really no precedent for this case. This is done with personal money, George.
Yeah. I mean, John Edwards, 6 week trial, 9 days of deliberations. The jury deadlocked on five of the six felony counts. The government had accused him of orchestrating about $1 million in payments to two wealthy donors made to hide his pregnant mistress from the media during his 2008 White House bid. And, you know, that went nowhere. So this is minor in comparison, and we'll see. We're going to have to see. Now, Karine Jean-Pierre, the aforementioned, the least qualified White House spokesperson in history, but it's okay because she's black and a lesbian, was on Air Force One flying with the president, I guess, to Mississippi. And then when he got there, he gave the wrong name of the town he was in. Okay? Don't ask. Just don't ask. And he did it twice after he thought he corrected himself by saying the correct name was wrong and said the wrong name again as the correct name. The guy doesn't know where he is. But anyway, on Air Force One, Karine Jean-Pierre, was asked about the indictment, and it's, you know, cuts out a little bit because it's in the air. But here's 384.
Two things. Any comment on Trump's indictment?
Heard from the president just earlier this morning on the South Lawn before taking off for this trip to Mississippi. Look, we're just not going to comment on any. And I'll just leave it there. I feel like I'm answering the question. Steve,
was,
you go.
Was the president briefed on the Trump indictment?
We found out, all of us, including the president, found out about the news yesterday, just like every other American, through the news reports. His chief of staff, Jeff Zients, let him know what occurred through media reports, just like, again, just found out when it was not given a heads up. Again, through media reports, that's how we learned about.
Okay. So that's it. So they learned through media reports. They had no heads up. Nobody would tell Joe Biden or the White House staff that this was coming down. Who knows? Maybe she's telling the truth. I wouldn't count on it, but who the heck knows? All right, we're going to come back. We got a lot more to get to. I'm Steve Malzberg. It's Friday here, for me anyway, right here on TNT Radio.
You should hear what Timothy Shea is talking about.
We're not conspiracy theorists. We're pattern recognition experts, okay? Every single time there's a story that is not conducive to Democrats pushing their narrative, bam, school shooting, bam, train derailment, bam, small plane into a food processing factory, bam, church fire. This story with Alvin Bragg not being able to indict Donald Trump must be so big that today we had to have a school shooting and not one, but two train derailments. A 70-car derailment in North Dakota that left, you guessed it, environmental catastrophe. And a runaway train in California that the crew bailed on. What's really going on? What is it that they don't want us to know about?
Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
How often should you wash your hands?
Maybe around 9 times a day.
4? Like 20?
Maybe twice a day.
Whenever they feel dirty.
When should you wash your hands?
After you touch some raw meat.
And before starting to eat.
At the beginning, I wash my hands before preparing food.
How would you rate your knowledge of food safety?
Probably like an 8 out of 10.
6 or 7.
7.5. Like, I know the basics, but I'm not necessarily like an expert in it by any means.
Food safety, it's in your hands.
Steve Malzberg on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back, folks. The great Andy McCarthy, legal analyst for Fox, of course, National Review, former federal prosecutor, really the legal expert, who will be with us on Tuesday of next week, by the way. That's the day that Trump goes at 2:15 p.m. Eastern time to the court, and all of it goes down. We'll find out we may even find out, there's a report, we might find out way before Tuesday, like over the weekend, what the indictment is, what the charges are. But Andy McCarthy will join us on Tuesday, so I'm looking forward to that. So let's go to Andy McCarthy here. And he had a lot to say. He was on Fox, naturally, talking about it all. And here is cut number 382.
This could take a very long time.
To quote the great,
there's going to be a lot of motions. Just the whole business of whether Bragg actually has jurisdiction to, you know, abracadabra, put a federal charge in this and suddenly turn it into a 5-year statute of limitations. That's going to be a big issue. I think another thing that we haven't focused too much on is they're saying there's 34 charges here. Mm-hmm. Now, this doesn't apply to New York, but in the Justice Department, we have guidance that tells prosecutors to limit the number of charges to the things that are really serious, because what you're always worried about for due process purposes is the prosecutor tries to kind of bowl over the jury with quantity when the case doesn't have quality. So to make this thing, which looks like really a nonsense case, turn it into 34 counts, which are now 34 felony counts, which in theory are, you know, each carries a 4-year potential prison statute. I mean, what is this guy, Nikki Barnes? Are you kidding?
All right. And here they play Michael Cohen, of course, former Trump attorney who, you know, went to jail and perjury and the whole thing. And now he's the key witness against Trump in this whole case. They play a little snippet of him. Where did he appear? On CNN. And then you'll hear Andy McCarthy weigh in on it. Here is cut number 383.
This notion of, oh, this is a weaker case than the January 6th. I acknowledge that. I always call this the Capone theory, the Al Capone theory. They couldn't get him on murder, extortion, racketeering, bootlegging, etc. They got him on tax evasion. If that crime, Don, was enough for me to be charged, fined, convicted, and sent to prison, why am I any different than Donald Trump?
I mean, tie that together. Does he have a point, or is he off the deep end?
No, well, you know, look, he doesn't have a point. You know, the problem is Al Capone actually did commit tax fraud. So getting him on that was legitimate. The federal prosecutors and the Federal Election Commission that actually have jurisdiction over federal campaign finance law investigated Trump on this and decided not to prosecute him.
Right. Right. And that's so brilliant. I mean, they got Al Capone, you know, the famous Chicagoland gangster. They couldn't get him on anything else, so they got him on tax evasion. Well, like he said, because Al Capone committed tax fraud. But Donald Trump, that doesn't mean Donald Trump did this. And the implication is that Donald Trump's committed so many crimes and they're going to get him on this, like Capone was gotten, if you will, on tax fraud. But you got to commit the crime that they get you on, quote unquote. And, you know, there's no crime here. It was investigated and the crime is just not there. Now, if there's a big, huge surprise, we'll see. Can't guarantee there won't be, but who the heck knows? Now, the next cut is from Douglas Brinkley. Douglas Brinkley, ladies and gentlemen, I was introduced to Douglas Brinkley through an acquaintance. He had him in a class in college. Douglas Brinkley is a presidential historian and a author and a, you know, a teacher and all that kind of stuff. And it's really amazing. Here he's on CNN. And I mean, this is so, I've said over the years that Douglas Brinkley has, and I used to interview him all the time. Douglas Brinkley, in my view, severe, severe, severe Trump derangement syndrome, has been the case for years and years. And I think it's reached a peak with him, or it just keeps getting worse and there's no end in sight. Here's Douglas Brinkley on CNN talking about this whole thing. Cut 380.
I see it as the decline of the Republican Party. I mean, we think of the GOP as Abraham Lincoln and Theodore Roosevelt, Ronald Reagan, and it's descending into Donald Trump, who's being indicted. And this is the first indictment with maybe others to come. Yet the Republican Party seems to be backing him for re-election. One would have thought January 6th and Trump's involvement with that would have been enough to derail Trump. That would have been the end of his role in politics. Now we're set up to see the biggest reality show that's actually real come to life, and watching I can't even think of an artifact except maybe wanted John Wilkes Booth after the Lincoln assassination, of a wanted poster or a mugshot that's going to be circulating around the world in the kind of way that this one of Donald Trump is. His finger, the fingerprinting, the booking of him, it's really dramatic stuff.
So this presidential historian who we're supposed to take seriously, I did take him seriously. He wrote the Reagan diaries. I mean, great stuff back then. But we're supposed to listen to a man who calls himself a presidential historian. And I'm sure would tell you he's as objective could be. As a historian, you must be. And he equates the wanted poster for John Wilkes Booth, who shot Abraham Lincoln, to what a Trump mugshot might be like. Really? I don't know. You got to be out of your mind. Really? Out of your mind. I guess we're lucky he didn't say, you know, what a most wanted picture, a poster of Hitler would have looked like. I mean, you know, that's what I would have figured he would have said. That would have been horrible enough. But the guy who's to equate Trump in any way, to utter it in the same breath, whatever your analogy is, use a different stupid analogy, okay? Really? John Wilkes Booth to Trump? It's a disease. It's an illness. It's a sickness. It rips apart the brain cells, and this is what you get. Trump derangement syndrome, TDS. Don't get too close to anybody who has it, folks, or you'll wind up like them. Now, Molly Hemingway on Fox News of The Federalist. I think she's editor of The Federalist, as a matter of fact. Here she is giving her 2 cents on all this. Cut 387.
Well, it's a very dark day. One of the things that we cared about in this country for a very long time was to be a nation ruled by law and not by men. This ushers in what will probably be a very dark era of political persecution and prosecution, the type that we normally associate with the Soviet Union or with banana republics. You know, during the Stalin era, it was common to say, show me the man and I'll find you the crime. It didn't matter, you know, whether someone had broken any law, they would figure out a way to charge and convict them of that for political opponents. And you see this all the time in third world countries where political opponents who are deemed a threat to the current regime are charged with crimes. This is not good for this country. It is very sad.
Well, it's beyond very sad. It's extremely dangerous. And, you know, she talks about Stalinist and Soviet Union and all that kind of stuff. Nancy Pelosi. Now, dare I say anything about Nancy Pelosi? Do I retroactively have the blood of Paul Pelosi on my hands if I criticize Nancy Pelosi after the fact? I know the media and the left told us if you had ever criticized Nancy Pelosi before the attack on Paul Pelosi, which, don't get me wrong, was horrible. And I'm glad the guy's arrested and gonna, you know, face the consequences. But if you ever had verbally attacked, if you will, Nancy Pelosi before that attack on Paul Pelosi, you had blood on your hands. Well, now, how about after the attack? Do I retroactively have blood on my hands? Okay, I don't know the answer to that. But Nancy Pelosi tweeted out, in part, no one is above the law. Everyone has the right to prove innocence. Now, I don't know. Is she senile? Some might argue that. And might have argued that for many years at this point. But everyone has the right to prove innocence. In what country? In what country? Dictator in waiting. You don't prove innocence in this country. So what the hell country are you talking about? You're innocent. At least Democrats are. Until the government, the prosecution, proves you guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Again, is she senile? Or did she say that on purpose? Or was it a Freudian slip because it's what she really believes? Especially in this case. That you have a right to prove your innocence. And this was Speaker of the House, the most powerful woman in the country. Well, Nancy Pelosi, I guess, what's her name was, theoretically speaking, Kamala Harris. You have a right to prove your innocence. Yep. No matter what the answer is to my multiple choice question that I just asked about why she said it, whether it's one of them, two of them, or all of the above, it's dangerous and it's frightening as hell. Dangerous and frightening as hell. Believe me. And that's where we are right now. That's where we are. It is really outrageous. Do you know that over the past 2 days, the State House in Tennessee was stormed by the students and protesters, trans people, and those protesting for trans people against the bills limiting drag shows and the transitioning of kids, you know, the sexual operations for young minors that was signed into law. Do you know that the session and the State House was interrupted by some of the members of the State House? Is that like a, what would you call that? An insurrection? And in Kentucky today, same thing. Same thing. What would you call that? Oh, those are people who are concerned for trans rights. There's nothing more important than that. No one will be arrested for that. Well, I shouldn't say that. There were some people in Kentucky arrested. I saw the pictures. I don't know about Tennessee. But I don't know if they're going to be charged by the Justice Department with insurrection. Joke, 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 joke. Okay. Oh, we got one more Molly Hemingway. Yeah, I digress to Pelosi, and there you go. This is cut 388.
In Washington and D.C., these are towns consumed, really obsessed with hatred for President Trump and the movement that he ushered in. Many Americans of all sorts of different political persuasions love this country. We want to be ruled by law. We don't want to see this type of political prosecution. And it is, you know, it is election interference, and it is something that is, you know, people who care about the country need to stand up and make sure that they let it be known that they do not support this type of political prosecution.
Yep. Yep. Peacefully. But yes, absolutely. We need an organized protest in Washington where people could come and peacefully protest. Okay. All right. Now, Jimmy Kimmel. Remember who Jimmy Kimmel is. Okay. On ABC. Remember what he did with the blackface, Karl Malone, no like, blah, 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 as he mocked his speech, as he mocked his color, as he stood there in blackface and black body in a basketball uniform. And then he did the same with Oprah on his old show that was on, I think, Comedy Central, where he's dressed as Oprah in blackface and he's running on a treadmill, but the maid is laying on the treadmill. He's running on the maid and she says, Miss Oprah, don't ask. As racist could be, but it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. He'll host the Academy Awards. His career will continue because he's a leftist. So here's Jimmy Kimmel. His show started on last night with a cut from Donald Trump. I guess he might have said these words, or it was AI. I don't know. But the picture was Trump in a jail cell, and then his jail cellmate tells him to shut the F up, and then Kimmel comes on stage and hugs the flag, believe it or not. Here's cut 385.
I haven't heard Joe say, thank you, President Trump, for the great job you did. Perhaps I'm just not listening. Now NATO's stuffed up with cash. Thank you very much, President Trump.
Shut the f*** up!
Thank you very much.
Thought would never come. We were skeptical, but let me give you some insight on how our jobs work here at this show. Less than 2 hours ago, I'm up in my office working on a monologue. I'm typing about opening day for baseball. I had a joke about how, I don't know, the people at Cracker Jack spent the whole winter in the dark sharing a can of Bumblebee tuna. We had a thing about a new nasal spray that'll give you an erection in 5 minutes, or your next one is free. And guess what? We had to throw it all in the garbage. It's all moot. Because the J in Donald J. Trump now stands for jail. That's right.
There you go. There you go. I do want to play one Democratic congressman from New York, Dan Golden. And he, very interesting, actually, he first went through the whole thing and how we don't know Dan Goldman. But he said there's no cause, this is not cause for celebration, speaking as a Democratic congressman. He's on MSNBC, and here's cut 374.
This is no cause to celebrate. This is a serious matter where the first time ever a former president is indicted. And we need to make sure that Donald Trump, like every defendant, gets the benefit of his constitutional rights. That is how our system has worked for nearly 250 years. And that is how it needs to continue to work to make sure that we are following the rule of law, that no one is above the law, and that we are a government of laws and not men, and especially one man. And so Donald Trump should have his day in court. He should challenge the indictment on whatever basis he thinks he should. He should have a right to a trial where 12 jurors will have to unanimously convict him based on proof beyond a reasonable doubt, the highest standard in our legal system. And that's how it has worked for every defendant in our history. It is a tried and true process that is the best in the world. And that's where this case should be litigated.
Wow, wow, wow. Just a little tiny bit, an itsy bitsy teeny weeny of a common sense from the left. Okay, we're going to come back. You're going to have to hear some of these because some of these are just unbelievable. I'm Steve Malzberg. One final segment left in the week right here on TNT Radio.
Oh, my. Polar bears are disappearing, but only from Al Gore's books and movies. Their numbers are hitting record levels.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Marano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Marano.
In Al Gore's first film, An Inconvenient Truth, in 2006, he made the polar bear the icon, the poster child of his film, claiming that the polar bear was hanging on to the last ice cube in the Arctic and was soon to go extinct. Fast forward to 2023, and the polar bears are now at or near historic population highs, and Al Gore's sequel? Nary a mention of the polar bear. Polar bear expert Dr. Susan Crockford has said polar bears turned out to be more flexible and resilient than predicted. You gotta hand it to Al Gore. Instead of dealing with the issue head on, he just acted like he never even talked about polar bears in his sequel. This is Mark Marano for the Marano Minute on TNT Radio.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Steve Malzberg on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, we are back. Now, follow this, okay? Ron DeSantis, in responding to the Trump indictment, put out a statement, and among the things he said the Soros-backed Manhattan DA, has continually bent the law to downgrade, you know, felonies to misdemeanors. But he called him the George Soros-backed Manhattan DA, Alvin Bragg, okay? Interestingly, earlier today, Soros put out a statement. I don't know what he said about Bragg. I didn't contribute to him. I didn't back him. Whether or not he got money from a Soros-funded PAC, as people have claimed, and it's, there have been reports, I don't know. But that aside, okay, we've all come to believe through reports that, you know, Soros, with his PACs and whatever, has been responsible in part for having these DAs who don't prosecute crimes win in big cities. So again, so he called him the Soros-backed Manhattan DA. Now, listen to how Joy Reid on MSNBC analyzes that. Listen to this insanity. Cut 372.
So I will just, my editorial comment is, it is a statement without dignity. The governor of Florida does not know the facts, so he cannot talk about questionable facts in this case. He doesn't know them. Only the grand jury knows, and this is a sealed indictment. So he's making a statement about something he doesn't know the answer to and throwing out, as you said, Andrew, dog whistles. You know, historically, this meme, this idea among the right that African-Americans, that black folks who are in positions are controlled by some Jewish overseer who's pulling their strings. That's what that statement reads like. And perhaps this governor should maybe read a history book to speak, because he might not understand what he is channeling, but he is channeling an era in American history that is one of the most ugly.
Look, she's out of her mind. I don't care what she's talking about in history. I'm not even going to go there. I'm going to say that if Ron DeSantis believes, as many people have until Soros denied it, and I don't know about the technical aspects of what Soros said in his denial, what he literally said and what it literally means compared to the loopholes in the statement. I don't know. But just take this on face value for what we've heard. It has nothing to do with the Jews controlling powerful black men. Not this. Why would we say this about any DAs around the country? black or white, that are soft on crime. They're referred to as Soros-backed or Soros, you know, Soros got them elected. Doesn't have anything to do with his race. And you know, or that Soros is Jewish. He's a billionaire and he's political. That's what this is all about. Here's cut 373.
For the governor of one of our largest states and most important states to throw out a miasma of words that are meant to trigger the far right for his political ambitions that really do sound like that old meme that this black prosecutor must be under the secret control of this, you know, murky Jewish millionaire. That could be 1950, and it is not dignified. It's beneath the dignity of a governor.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Well, you're beneath the dignity of a talk show host. Unbelievable. Everything is made into race. Everything is made into race. But it's not just her. You know, Joe Scarborough has a habit of, he's not Jewish, okay? And you don't have to be. But the woman he's married to, her late father, Zbigniew Brzezinski, sorry about that, Zbigniew Brzezinski, he was, of course, in the Nixon administration, and many believed him to have a problem with Israel. In fact, some considered him to have a big problem with Israel, okay? So Joe Scarborough often goes and calls people anti-Semitic. He calls, Trump and Republicans. Trump for saying to Jews, you better wake up and realize that what you have in Israel, as support for Israel among Jews in the U.S. dwindles, and Scarborough calls that anti-Semitic. Really? Really? I mean, you're making this up? Who told you to say it? And now with the Soros thing again, oh, it's anti-Semitic, blah, blah, blah. And he's got Senator Elizabeth Warren sitting there. Here is cut 381.
What's this line?
Look at the Soros back. No, it's just Jews. They're attacking Jewish international bankers. It's what anti-Semites have been doing for hundreds of years, attacking Jewish international bankers. And that's what they do. They try to blame everything on Jewish international bankers. It's Germany, 1933.
So now let's get this straight. So if you notwithstanding the denial by Soros today, that was the first time he denied it that I am aware of. So he hadn't denied it when DeSantis wrote what he wrote. So that aside, as I said before, so if you say that, if you call Alvin Bragg and DAs or any politician that was backed financially in any way by George Soros, who's a radical leftist, a Soros-backed DA, a Soros-backed whatever, how many times did Scarborough in that 24 second cut you just heard say global Jewish bankers? How many times did he repeat that? Three. That's more anti-Semitic than anything. And that's not anti-Semitic. That's my point. This is a sick, sick joke. How dare he call DeSantis and Republicans and this is Nazi Germany by pointing out that a far left billionaire who gives a crap about his religion it supports the far left in political causes and elections. That's Nazism. See, folks, these people are sick and they're dangerous. These kinds of things are dangerous. DeSantis is far from an anti-Semite. Trump is far from an anti-Semite. Look at all he did for Israel. His grandchildren are Orthodox Jews. I mean, what the hell? But Joe Scarborough now, the global Jewish bankers. Oh, my God. I can't even stand to hear him talk. I really can't. And I used to fill in, like I said, I used to fill in for the guy when he was a conservative. Of course, he claims he still is. When he hosted when he did Scarborough Country back in the early 2000s, 2003, 2004, I filled in for him. I was his regular fill-in. Unbelievable. Could you imagine now? Okay, so let's go to The View, because we haven't so far. So here we are. This is their take on the Trump indictment. They could barely contain themselves. Here's Joy and Sunny. It's not really her name. Cut 378.
And in other legal news, and to quote the great Sonny Hostin, the twice impeached, one term, once indicted, but who's counting? Former president is reportedly facing more than 30, count them, criminal charges. So, how do we feel about this unprecedented moment in American history?
I called it.
Did you? We feel good! Begging for applause.
I said he would be held criminally responsible because no one is above the law. He would be at the very least charged. He not only has the New York case, he has the Georgia case, he has the Department of Justice cases. There are two or three of them there. I mean, you can't commit so many crimes and think that you are above the law, even if you are the president.
So she already knows that he committed so many crimes. I guess he has to prove his innocence. Here's cut. This is Ana Navarro. God help us again. This is cut number. Oh, she's talking about the grand jury in New York. You ready for this? Cut 379.
Listen, the first thing I want to do is I want to thank this special grand jury because they have been meeting for weeks and weeks. They've done this incredibly seriously. This is not an easy case. This is a case that has risks. And so I thank them because these are regular New Yorkers. These are not people with a political agenda. These are regular New Yorkers. Donald Trump finally won a popular vote yesterday. Yeah. The grand jury voted to indict him. You know, I was thinking last night, boy, because I was reading this article where Ivanka and Jared apparently want to start their new life in Miami, and I was thinking, you know, they now can give their children the distinction of having matching mugshots for their both of their grandfathers.
Yeah.
You can pick whether you want Charlie Kushner or Donald Trump mugshot if you are Jared and Ivanka's child.
So she's talking, Jared Kushner's father, who got in trouble, of course, married to Ivanka. So she's bringing up the president's grandchildren and mocking the president's grandchildren. Pig. She's a pig. She said that these are regular New Yorkers. They don't have a political agenda. Could I ask the obvious question? How the F do you know? How do you know they don't have a political agenda? Some of them. How do you know that? You know these people? You've spoken to these people? You're friends with these people? You know who they are? You know their names? You've conversed with them? How do you? And how? I mean, I'm speechless. Really. How do you make that statement? How do you, if you said, of course, all of them most likely are not politically motivated, but to say they are regular New Yorkers, they are not politically motivated, how do you know that? And the answer is, you have no earthly idea. You're making it up. You're lying by making that definitive statement when, unless you know these people, all of them, you don't have a clue. I've never heard anything like that. Never. She knows the grand jury. She knows who they are, what motivated them, what their interests are. She knows. There's nothing to say. Nothing. Folks, try to enjoy your weekend. Okay, just try. And God willing, I'll see you back here Monday Eastern Time, 10 p.m. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. Be here. Steve Malzberg. Thanks for listening to TNT Radio. Stay tuned for Misty Winston.